Hey there, a quick favor. We are conducting an audience survey, and we'd be really grateful if you could take just a few minutes and answer some questions in the survey. Please visit survey.prx.org/world to take the survey today. Again, that's survey.prx.org/world. And thank you.
Last week, and you'd rather die than be punished in military prisons in Iran. Yeah.
When I tried to learn more about how Iran operates in secret, I found Mohammad Rezai, a dissident from Iran's navy who was nearly kidnapped.
I changed my number 3 times.
He was shadowed by the Iranian government. Then a group of Turkish men started offering to take him abroad.
And I'm laughing. It's very joke for me.
He was suspicious, but when they asked him to get into their car to talk over his escape to Europe and take a picture, he got in. This is Lethal Descent. Today, the story of how Rezai survives and breaks free of the plot against him.
Esma said to me she was a CIA agent.
And I learned just how murky this whole kidnapping operation really was.
Why would I say this lie? He just needs to go back to his family. I'm so confused right now.
Episode 6, Woman from the CIA.
We're here in a park.
My house is near to this park.
This is where Rezai comes to get away from life's stresses, like his near kidnapping he's been telling me about. We find a bench, sit down, and he begins telling me about the moment his would-be kidnappers, the Salams, asked him to get in their car. Even though Rezai knew better, he still got into the BMW. Ehsan Salam had told Rezai that he and his cousins wanted him to get in the car so they could take a picture together. Now Rezai was sitting in the back seat next to the family boss, Ehsan Salam. Ehsan was wearing a black suit.
Ehsan
said if we wanted to kidnap you, we could do so easily. This is Turkey. We could get someone to throw you in a potato sack in the trunk for
$10,000.
We could work with the mafia. We don't want to kidnap you. This was hard to believe. Now he was surrounded by the Salams. Then, from the driver's seat, Ismail mentions the one person who confused Rezai the most. She wasn't a Salam. She was Catherine, an American woman. The first time Rezai heard her name was from Hakan, the chef who couldn't cook, in the kebab shop. He said, I have a friend named Catherine with a boat. Catherine wanted to sail to Greece, but she needed a captain for her boat. Hakan and his cousins suggested, why don't you be the captain? But Rezai was skeptical. I said, I don't know anything about this boat. They said it's docked in Tuzla. You can go there and see it. Tuzla is a harbor town about an hour drive from Istanbul. Rezai pushed for more details about the boat. I finally got some specifics. The country, its flags, its IMO number. An IMO number is like a license plate for boats. All sea vessels have one. IMO stands for International Monitor Organization. He says, I checked in with friends to see if the boat existed. And it did. It was a cargo ship. Rezai's friends in the Iranian Navy were able to look it up. It was owned by a cargo company and flew an American flag, he says. This seemed like a good sign. And so he agreed for the Salams to set up a meeting with Catherine. When Catherine showed up at the kebab shop, she was with two of the Salams.
My picture.
Rezai shows me a selfie Ismail took.
Catherine and me.
In it, Rezai's standing next to Catherine. He's giving a thumbs up. Everyone's smiling. Catherine is a white woman with platinum blonde hair and prominent cheekbones. She's wearing a crisp white button-down shirt and torn jeans. She's beautiful in that American model kind of way. Rezai says Catherine told him what he had already heard from the Solemns, that she owned a boat that could take him to Greece, that she needed a captain.
He called Singh Omad. باز مثلا یه جورایی به قول معروف چیز کرد که آره من
Catherine told me she would pay whoever captained her boat $10,000 a month. She said I could even work for her once I got to Greece. She told me these things.
من کار کنی کلن بعد از اینکه رفتیم یونان ادامه سفر رو هم باسه من کار کنیم. بله، کاترین صحبت که میکرد.
It seemed too good to be true. So Rezai did some more research. He says a boat's IMO number can be used to discover all sorts of information. You can check the location, they told him. So Rezai did. Catherine and the Solemns had told him the boat was in Tuzla. The boat is not in Tuzla, Rezai says. It was about 60 miles away from Tuzla.
You got suspicious because this is where your profession, you're an expert in this. You knew you were looking on the internet and you could see the boat's plate number, basically.
He cuts me off and says, you can't look that kind of stuff up on the internet, but you can see it as a naval officer. My friend in Iran who works for the Navy, he has access to that. Rezai knew something was off. And yet, despite this, when the Solemns were trying to coerce him into the back seat of their BMW, he still got in the car. He was trying to stay calm sitting next to Ehsan when Ismail, the English-speaking Solemn, mentioned Catherine. He told Rezai, there's something you should know about Catherine.
Catherine Maur CIA bude.
He said that Catherine was an agent from the CIA, and she hired them to take me to the consulate. Rezai says he didn't know what to think, so he told Ismail the truth. I told Ismail, at this point, I'm having a hard time trusting you. Then Rezai tried to negotiate. I told him, look, I need my documents, my money, I need to change my clothes. I'm not ready to go yet.
در قفل کردن و همین صحبت شد که این جوریه ما اگر می‌خواستیم الان چیکار می‌خوای بکنیم
But then Ehsan locked the door.
گفتم به هر حال میتونین تست کنین اگر واقعا
He said now that the door is closed are you going to run? They were taunting me. I said if you start driving I can bang on the windows and cause a scene.
بابام بعد برین من کمی کمی شینی درو پیکر ماشینو خورد می‌کنم
But this didn't seem to worry the Solemns. Erdal, the cousin in the passenger seat, pulled out a taser. He played with it. It sparked. He pointed to the taser and said in Turkish, "We don't want to force you." But then Erdal spoke again, this time in Farsi.
سه چهار مرتبه بیشتر شاید اینو به من گفت که محمد فرار کن از یالوا برو اصلا اینجا نمون
Erdal told me to flee Yalova. He said don't stay here. Whether you come with us or not, you should flee Turkey. He said it three or four times.
در هر صورت از اینجا فرار کن.
None of the other Solemns could speak Farsi, and the leader of the pack, Ehsan Solem, got mad that Erdal was saying something to Rezai that he could not understand. He demanded Erdal translate. Rezai says this emboldened him.
شما داری من عصبی میکنی. من یه کاری نکنی که فردا هم من نیام فلان.
I started getting angry and said I would return tomorrow if they let me go now. I told them I had little to lose, and that part I was honest about. I was trying to save my life at this point.
میگن ولی شاید مثلا اگر بیان و اصرار بکنم باهاشون با کشتی برم قبل از اون شب.
It worked. They let him go. It's not entirely clear why. Rezai grabbed his bike and started riding. The Solemn stalked him in the BMW, following him all the way home. Then they peeled off. Was it really possible? An American somehow got mixed up in a kidnapping operation for Iran, one of the United States' biggest adversaries? Later on, after Rezaei went to the police, a local court in Yalova asked Catherine to give a statement about Mohammad Rezaei's claims. I've got her statement right here. She says, I was in Turkey for business. Ehsan had business in Yalova, so I went with him to Yalova for sightseeing. I saw this person named Mohammad at the place where we went to have dinner. She goes on to explain that she didn't know about Mohammad Rezaei ahead of time. She just happened to meet him at the kebab shop. She tells the prosecutor she talked to Rezaei. She says, he told me to help him find a job. We did not discuss taking him to America or any other country. For someone the Salams claimed worked for the CIA, it was not hard to find Catherine's phone number. Before calling, I did a little research. We're not going to use Catherine's last name because she was not indicted in the Yalova kidnapping plot. She was called in by the local prosecutor to make a statement, then released and allowed to leave Turkey. According to public records, she lives in Texas. On LinkedIn, she claims to work in oil and gas, but doesn't name an employer. It seems she's also the manager of a cosmetic surgery practice in Texas. You can see her photo on their website. A background check on Catherine shows no arrests. In 2011, she appeared in Dallas County Municipal Court to plead guilty to a traffic offense, speeding. That's it. None of these details explain how she might get caught up in an Iranian kidnapping operation on the other side of the world. So I dial her number. It's ringing. I wait. She doesn't pick up. I send her a message telling her who I am. It's the evening in Istanbul. I go make dinner. Then my phone rings. It's Catherine. I pick up. You're not going to hear Catherine. The U.S. Federal Communications Commission doesn't just let you call people up, record them, and air it without their knowledge or permission. I can report on the conversation, though. I got exact quotes. An actor will perform them. After I answer the phone, I ask Catherine about her statement in the Yalova court records. She's caught off guard.
I don't know. What is this case saying about me? I'm so confused.
Likewise, I say. I tell Catherine the court documents say she met Rezaei at the kebab restaurant and the meeting was orchestrated by the Salams. I tell her they were trying to use your name and you being an American as a way to win Rezaei's trust when in reality they wanted to turn him over to the Iranian government. They were working for the Iranian regime.
I only spoke to the guy literally like 2 minutes, but I only know what I was told. So I was told that the guy was in the military and he ran away from the military and left his family and children in Iran. And the government was wanting him so they could deport him back.
Catherine said the Salams told her Rezaei deserted his family and they asked for her help to try to convince Rezaei to do the right thing.
Could I talk to the guy and just get him to talk to me and they would get him to go back?
Whoa, this is not what Catherine said in her statement to the prosecutor in Yalova. In that statement, she said the meeting with Rezaei was happenstance and that they, quote, did not discuss taking him to America or any other country. I want to clarify with Catherine what the Salam family told her. I say, oh, so the Iranian regime wanted Rezaei to go back?
No, they told me the Turkish government wanted him to go back because he was there illegally.
That's not how deportation works in Turkey. The Turkish police don't hire civilians to try to persuade undocumented immigrants to return to their countries of origin. They raid their homes and take them to a detention center and then process their deportation. It's not a choice. Also, Rezaei was not an undocumented immigrant. He was a refugee, which is a classification bestowed by the Turkish government and protected by law. Catherine doesn't seem to know any of this. She explains why she talked with Rezaei.
I was like, why? Why would he leave his family? This is really bad. He needs to go back. This is what I was told. So when I talked to the guy, I just said, you know, why are you wanting to leave? You know, you have family, don't you? I think he said he had 2 or 3 children. And so literally I said, you know, don't you miss your kids, your wife? And you need to go back.
Over the course of our conversation, Catherine repeats this claim 17 times, that she told Rezaei he should go back to Iran because of his kids. Rezaei actually only has one son with his first wife, who divorced him after he fled Iran. But lots of what she thought about Rezaei could have been misinformation from the Salams. It's hard to know for sure.
I asked Catherine how she knew the Solemns.
Actually, I knew them from Africa.
Africa? Can you tell me a little more about that?
Yeah, I worked with United Nations, and they actually came over to purchase some things from one of the governments there.
What were they purchasing?
Well, I have no idea.
Catherine's LinkedIn page doesn't say anything about the UN. It says she's in the oil and gas industry. And then there's the cosmetic surgery practice that she supposedly manages. I ask her, and you have a business?
No, I work for the United Nations, and my partner is with the United Nations as well. So whenever people come over to the country, he's the one that picks them up and welcomes them in and takes care of them.
She says Aeson was her partner, though at first it's not clear if she means business partner or romantic partner, or maybe both. Catherine tells me they met in 2019 and that she got to know Aeson and his cousin Ismail in Africa. In which part of Africa, I ask? There's a silence.
All over Africa.
Was it like South Africa?
I go from Nigeria to Uganda to Rwanda to Congo. I go everywhere.
Which UN organization do you work for? Do you still work for the UN?
No.
I offer some examples of UN agencies. The World Food Program? The UN Development Program?
It was the World at the World Forum.
We asked the UN World Forum for Development and Planning if Aeson Solemn or Catherine ever worked for them. No. They said their names have never been in their system. Aeson Solemn has a defense contracting firm called Buy Solemn that sells weapons. We know this from court documents. Also, you can just go to their website. But Catherine says they weren't in Africa to sell weapons. I ask her what business they were doing.
I don't know. I wish I knew.
So you did try to get more information from them.
You know, I didn't really try to get more information because I really didn't care, you know, because it's, you know, if it's none of my business, I really don't care ever. I don't get into people's business.
What Catherine is telling me is not adding up. How does someone work for the UN or do business with the UN or do business at all without knowing what that business is? Either she's hiding something or she was completely unaware of what was going on. She says when they would all go for dinner, the Solemns and their friends would speak in Turkish, which she couldn't understand. So she'd check out.
Like I said, if they spoke, most of the people that came didn't speak English, so I stayed on my phone.
Both Rezaei and the court records mentioned that Catherine was Aeson Solemn's girlfriend. Even Aeson claimed this in his court testimony.
We're business partners, but okay.
Catherine denies it. It's hard to pin down what Catherine means. At one point, she tells me she really wanted to do business with Aeson, but that he didn't have the money to invest. At another point, she says she was a member of an anti-human trafficking organization called Saving Jane, and that she was researching human trafficking in Africa. I ask her, but there was no romantic relationship between you guys?
I don't think that is important at all.
Whether they had a romantic relationship or not, it doesn't seem that Catherine knew who these guys were. I ask her, so you had no idea that this was an espionage situation and that, you know, these guys were working not for the Turkish government, but the Iranian government?
Oh my God, no, I had no idea.
They never mentioned to you that they were telling Mohammad Rezaei that they were going to...
Never.
Right.
And if they would have, I would have been like, whoa, why? Why would you do this? What's going on? You know, that sounds like it's not the truth, what you're saying, but not one time. And if they did, it was in Turkish. Like I said, I didn't understand them.
That must have been difficult. I bet you have, like, no idea how you landed in the middle of this.
I stayed on my phone literally all the time.
So now that I'm telling you all this, how do you feel?
I'm freaked out a bit because even when I was talking to the guy didn't seem remorseful about his family or sad. It seemed like the few minutes I spoke to him, like he was lying about something. So, you know, I don't know. You know, sometimes refugees lie to stay in one country or another. I don't know. But I don't know his story. All I know is that, you know, I just felt sad for his wife and children, not for him, because he deserted them.
I tell Catherine the prosecutor's accusations that the Solemns were part of an Iranian kidnapping ring in Yalova, that an Iranian dissident named Mash'ali Firouzeh was kidnapped, and that Rezaei was next on the list of targets.
Who were these people? I mean, that's scary to me.
I agree with her. They are scary.
They're all brothers and cousins, I tell her. And they were supposedly going to use your boat. Do you have a boat?
Yeah, I used to have a boat.
What happened to the boat?
Oh, I sold the boat.
Was it here in Turkey?
No.
So you never had a boat in Turkey?
No.
I want to make sure Catherine understands what I'm saying, so I repeat myself. I tell her that the Salims tried to convince Rezai that she owned a boat and that with her help as an American, she cuts me off.
Why would I say this lie? He just needs to go back to his family. I'm so confused right now.
Over the course of our hour-long conversation, Catherine repeats that she's so confused several times. She's not the only one. Talking with Catherine felt like entering an alternate reality. Her version of events was radically different from Rezai's and also what was in the court records. Was she in on the whole operation? Or did the Salims manipulate and exploit her? I can't tell, so we keep talking. I ask her how she would describe herself. I'm just trying to figure out how to refer to you in the most accurate way, I say. There's a long pause.
I have no idea.
A businesswoman, is that how you describe yourself when you meet people?
Yeah, I would say a businesswoman.
Okay.
I'm a mom, a caring person.
A mother?
Yeah, I am a mother.
How many kids do you have?
I have two. My oldest son was killed.
I tell her I'm so sorry to hear that and ask what happened.
He was killed by a drunk driver, so.
How old was he?
25.
When did this happen?
This is about 4 or 5 years ago.
Catherine says after her son died, she suffered several strokes and heart attacks. I'm so sorry, I tell her. And she tells me she's not a bad person.
I am like in no means to try to be ugly to anyone ever in my whole life. If anything, I try to help everyone.
I'm not accusing you of anything, I tell her. I just want to know what happened. I ask Catherine what she thinks about the Salims.
They are really, I thought, was genuinely kind and nice. I never felt unsafe and never felt in danger. They never were angry or aggressive toward me. They, all of them, were really nice, genuinely really kind people. So I feel bad that they got wrapped up and sucked into bad things for money.
You think that's why they would do it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because they are, you know, they're always very well dressed. They speak well, you know, it's very frustrating when you think that you know people. I mean, I still don't doubt they're very kind. I would still be their friend.
You'll still want to be friends with them despite what happened?
Absolutely.
When my producer called Catherine to fact check what she told me, she said, I've already told your reporter everything I had to tell them. When he asked if she understood she has a prominent role in the story being aired, she said, I didn't have a prominent role because I have done nothing. I don't even know what the hell is going on. And then she hung up. We messaged Catherine a detailed list of the assertions she made and others made about her. She reiterated her comments from our interview and called the claims about her by the Salims and Rezai, he said, she said, lies. We reached out to members of her family to verify her claims, but didn't hear back. We talked with someone who heard all about Rezai's conversation with Catherine right after it happened. Their account of what Rezai told them matches what Rezai told us. We agreed not to identify this person because they fear for their safety. It's also worth noting that Rezai's story matches his court testimony. We asked Saving Jane if Catherine ever worked for them. They said Catherine approached them about a possible program in 2018, but they didn't do it. We asked the CIA twice if Catherine works for them. They didn't reply. After Rezai escaped from the BMW, he rode his bike home. The next morning, he went to the police with a friend who spoke Turkish. He says, I showed and explained everything. I showed the pictures, the WhatsApp messages. He's talking about the WhatsApp messages with the Salims and the pictures he took with them. I told the police the Salims were claiming to work for someone in the CIA. Then we stayed at the station answering questions until 3 a.m.
بعد دیگه کسای دیگه اومدن.
Police from different cities and branches of the Turkish government showed up. They pulled up pictures of the Salams.
این پرونده رو شکایت رو.
But the local police gave Rezai some unsolicited advice. He says, one of the police officers told me these guys seem to have a history of crime. Let the case go. Don't press charges. The police told me I shouldn't press further on this issue. That these guys are not the kind of guys you want to go after. Even my translator got scared. But then a week later, Turkish intelligence officers got in touch with Rezai.
و بعدن که استخبارات از آنکارا اومد گفت که شکایتتو انجام دادی فلان گفتم که نه واقعیتش من شکایت.
When the intelligence officers came from the capital Ankara, they asked if I had pressed charges and I said no.
دیگه با هم سری رفتیم دوباره امنیت و اونجا به رئیس امنیت گفت یکی از پرسنل شما اینجوری گفته شکایت نکن.
Then we went to the local authorities together, and the intelligence officers argued that I should.
So then this case became bigger than just you.
Yeah, but I started it. As he says this, Rezai smiles. The next evening, Rezai returned to the Salams, just as he told them he would. They met in front of a mall.
اینجا
it's a tiny mall compared to what we're used to in Istanbul.
The same place where we're parked now, talking.
Not the fanciest. اینجا جا پارکینگه.
بله.
Only on that night, undercover cops were shadowing Rezai. Ismail Salem pinged him on WhatsApp. Where's your suitcase? He asked. Ismail could see Rezai, but Rezai couldn't see Ismail. Who are the two men following you? Ismail asked. He was referring to the undercover cops who were clearly not undercover enough. Rezai was walking around outside the mall. He changed directions and lost the cops. There was still a part of him that wanted to believe Ismail.
99% از ذهن من.
My mind was 99% convinced that this is a ruse and it's impossible. But humans try to convince themselves that maybe there's a chance. Maybe there's a 1% chance. Ismail asked Rezai why he called the police.
اگر مطمئنین که من گفتم که قاعدتاً دیگه نباید حرفی داشته باشیم.
Rezai replied, if you think I went to the police, why are you even here? Catherine is very upset that you told the police, Ismail says to Rezai. He tells him, the U.S. Embassy doesn't want to get involved with the Turkish police, nor does the CIA. Then Ismail Salam tries one more time to get Rezai alone. He tells him to walk to the bridge on the highway, but Rezai would not. The Salams operation was over. The court documents support Rezai's version of events. With license plate readers, the authorities were able to track the cars the Salams used. They gathered CCTV footage, seized telecommunication data to pinpoint their locations in Yalova. And after Turkish authorities began arresting people, they found a couple of the suspects hadn't erased their WhatsApp chats about the operation. Oops. It took years for the authorities to assemble the case against the kidnapping operation in Yalova and to establish its ties to Iran. In February 2022, 2.5 years later, they arrested the Salams. But they weren't the only ones who got handcuffs. The authorities had burrowed deep into the underworld network that surrounded the Salams. They found a shady prosecutor and people connected to the most shadowy parts of Iran's government. They detained everyone, hauled them in for questioning, but couldn't crack them, mostly. When investigators zeroed in on one man at the center of the operation and brought him in for questioning, he confessed. Lethal Dissent is reported by me, Feri Banawa. Reporting in Turkey by Betty Leski. Voice acting by Kendra Rains. The series is produced by Chris Harlan Dunaway. Our editor is Ibi Caputo. Additional research by Omar Faru. Fact-checking by Betty Leski and John Klopotowski. Özge Sebzeci is our photographer and multimedia producer. Artwork for the podcast is by Hatia Gerik.
Musical score and sound design by Ozair Ahmed. Legal review by Eric Brass. This story would not be possible without support from the Pulitzer Center and Radio Zamana. Thank you to our partners, The Verge and PRX. Special thanks to executive producer for The World, Dan Lothian, and managing editor for The World, Tinku Ray. Also, our friend ER, Shahnam Golsheni, Adnan Devram, Damian Fitzpatrick, Hamish Brown, Jonah Heller, Levi Bridges, Kate Ellis, Stephen Smith, The JJs, Banu Azizian, Andisha Azizian, Jawad Hassanzadeh, Rashad and Alan at Splice Media. And to the Iranians who helped us, whose full names we can't use for security reasons, thank you, HM, AM, and MB.